Caroline Willie D. Mays for broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, which today is Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena because the Predators take on the Vegas Golden Knights tonight at 7 p.m. And that music can only mean one thing. That means Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and Ensworth head football coach, joins us now. Tim, appreciate you for joining us. The Titans trade a 2025 third and swap seventh round picks with the Kansas City Chiefs for luxurious Snead. Are you surprised by the trade compensation, and why was the asking price so low, in your opinion?
I am surprised. I think when we talked last week, I was maybe trying to forecast it. I had it, at a richer price tag. That's a good thing for the Titans. And, you know, my guess is, you know, the Titans, had to sign him to a big contract, right? I mean, like, that's the presumption on it. And so I think that probably a general feeling that Kansas City knew that they weren't going to extend him or be able to get him under contract. And so with that, the tag was really only used in order to be able to get something of value rather than letting him walk in free agency and ended up with some type of compensatory pick. So I think it's a good thing for the Titans. I think they've added a really good player. And I think Kansas City, maybe just with the situation they were in with Chris Jones and Legarius Sneed, felt like that was the best, thing to do, considering you had two really good players that were due contracts.
And if I'm the Chiefs, I could look at it like, I got Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones and Travis Kelce. As long as I've got those three players, traded away Tyreek Hill, still won a Super Bowl, so that could be Kansas City's mentality. But just how good is Legarius Sneed? How much of a difference maker can he be for this Titans defense?
Yeah, I think he's a really good player. I think he's, when you think about matchups, it's a matchup league. He's a guy that matches up well with, an opposing team's, star receiver. I think he's also a guy that has good zone skills as well as good man skills. And so, look, playing defensive back in the National Football League is hard. The rules are set up so that offenses have success. You can only tackle guys a certain way. It's a difficult position to play, and it's hard to play it at a high level for a long period of time. And so, the big thing would be to say, did the Titans get better in the secondary with this trade? And I think you can absolutely say yes. And so I think that, what does he bring? I mean, he brings more experience and probably better play and ability and confidence to the secondary, which I think is probably wanted and needed with some recent departures, as well as guys that have been drafted that just really haven't worked out.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head football coach at Ensworth Tigers, with the Ensworth Tigers. Now, Tim, are you, because it seemed like, when this whole thing first started with Legarius Sneed, there was no sort of red flags. It was just, okay, are they going to tag him or are they going to tag Chris Jones? Who are they going to tag first? Well, obviously, they tag Legarius Sneed, signed Chris they signed a big defensive tackle, Chris Jones. But then all of a sudden you started to hear, well, he didn't practice much because of injury. They didn't say he missed a bunch of games. It just started coming out, well, he hadn't practiced much. Are you concerned about that, or would you be concerned about that moving forward? Because to me, it wasn't a problem when you tagged him. It wasn't a problem last year, but all of a sudden now, yeah, this is starting to leak out that, oh, he didn't practice. I can tell you there's probably half of the NFL that didn't practice for one reason or another, and a lot of it had to do with probably nagging injuries throughout the season.
Yeah, I think that this is how this typically works. When you're going to guarantee that type of money, when you're going to make a significant trade, you're going to gather as much information as you can. And I'll just give you a good example. I remember when Anquan Boldin was headed to free agency, and I don't even remember what team I was. Actually, I don't even think I was on a team anymore. I think I was in TV. In fact, I know I was. I was in TV, and I got a phone call from a team that was interested in signing Anquan Boldin as he was leaving Arizona. So somebody called me and said, hey, from my former team, one of my former teams, like tell me about it, like him practicing and stuff. And people remember Anquan, he was a really tough player. Like he, you know, played with a broken jaw. He played with, you know, a broken foot. He had a dislocated toe one time and they had to, you know, hide his pads in the locker room because he wanted to play and you know, the team didn't want him to because they thought he would re-injure himself. And so, you know, he didn't practice a lot because he was really banged up, but it wasn't because he didn't want to practice. I say all that to say that, like, you better be gathering that information. Mm-hmm. And I would think that in today's world with, you know, the experience that Rand has, the resources that you have to find out a player's practice habits, a player's health, all of that stuff is going to get checked out prior to, you know, a trade of any type of magnitude being made. So, excuse me, in terms of like things coming out after the fact, look, sometimes it is just trying to appease the fan base in Kansas City that maybe is unhappy with the fact that they lost a good player. They didn't love the draft compensation. Truthfully, I think that if you're sitting here as a Tennessee Titans fan, I think you should be happy about the trade. You should not be worried about the practice participation in LeGarius Sneed.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking, Tim. I looked at it from the standpoint, you know how many guys either are held out during the week or possibly can practice, but the coach say, hey, listen, sit back, you know, and take a few days off. As long as you can practice Thursday and Friday, we're good. That happens more times than not in the NFL, especially now with so much money involved. I'm not too concerned about it, but I know when you're paying that much money, you want to make sure you cross every T and dot every I, so I can understand from that standpoint. Another thing I want to ask you about, Tim, is the new rule, the new kickoff rule. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about this as a whole on the show afterwards. But are you in favor of this new rule? And why implement this rule when, you know, it seems like, you know, concussions and everything else has dropped in regards to kickoff return? You're still going to have it because it's a high impact play, but to change it that drastically, it does. I'm not going to say it sort of takes away, but it does change as far as you scheming and game planning for your particular kickoff and kickoff return.
Yeah, I think it's a massive change. It's a huge rule change. Mm-hmm. I will say this, you know, I think we sometimes, you know, argue against the National Football League and like, do you really care about player safety? You're adding more regular season games. Do you really care about it? You know, like that type of stuff. This 100% is a player safety, longevity of the game decision. The NFL studied it. They know that kickoff and kickoff return, you know, the kickoff play in general is, you know, leads to more concussions disproportionately than any other play in the game. And that's why, if you just think about the changes, like shoot, go back to when my dad played, you used to be able to cut on kickoff return, got rid of that. Then, you know, you had wedges, they got rid of the wedges. Then they got rid of, you know, the running starts from 10 yards deep for the kickoff team. They've, you know, adjusted where the ball goes on a touchback. There have been kind of little modifications along the way because the NFL knows that it's a really dangerous play and there are a lot of guys getting hurt and a lot of guys getting hurt with head injuries. And so this to me was, you know what, like let's stop inching to that point and let's just go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and say we're making this change in the name of player safety because we need to do it. There's disproportionate in terms of head injuries on this play. And so, look, that's what they're doing. I'm not going to be critical of the NFL when it's in the name of player safety and it's actually in the name of player safety. I'll be critical when you're like, hey, player safety, but let's play a few more games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that I'm okay with it in that regard. And then I would say you're right about it's going to change the way we coach the game. The game is played. It's going to change who makes rosters because of the different skill set in terms of covering a kick in that regard. The value of a guy that can kick touchbacks, if that's in fact what you want him to do, since the ball will be placed on the 30. I think there are a lot of factors to this that are going to impact the game. It's going to take it adjusting and getting used to. But I think ultimately less guys will get hurt and we'll have less head injuries. And that's what the NFL wants. And I think it's, I don't know. I don't think that we should be critical of them for that.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, talking NFL. So, Tim, the other one that I think we're all still trying to envision what impact this is going to be on the game, but I can certainly understand the outcry of defensive players saying, okay, you got all these rules that are making it easier for the offense, and now you've got this hip toss, whatever they call this thing, where you can't drag the guy down. I've seen it happen a few times. Like, you know it when you see it, and everybody cringes. You can see guys getting the high ankle sprain. They're getting pulled down from behind awkwardly. And I don't want to see that. But at the same time, as a defender, I'm trying to figure out the technique change that you will have to make and the impact it's going to have. Because I can see a defender going, well, I've got to get the guy down on the ground. I mean, this is the only way I can do it. I'm not grabbing him by the face mask. I'm not taking his knees out. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, I think it's a hard one. I mean, to me, this feels like, you know, it's like this big extension of the horse collar tackle. And look, the horse collar tackle, you know, you can see it. It's like directly behind. But this hip drop tackle that you're referring to, sometimes it's on the side. Sometimes, you know, contact is originally be made, you know, head to head. There are a number of plays where, yes, it is the defender coming from behind. But from a coaching perspective, I don't know what you do. I mean, if you're coming from behind, you have to, you know, kind of just go for the guy's, you know, go for the guy's legs to try to trip him up. I think this one's going to be a really difficult one to coach, to, you know, guys out of it. Because, you know, when we talk about, like, hey, you can't hit a guy, a defenseless receiver, high as he's coming across the middle, like, you could say, all right, well, the guy, he needs to take, you know, change, like, his target area of where he wants to hit that receiver that's coming across the middle. I'm not saying it won't take some adjusting, but you at least know what the coaching point can be. I'm not really sure what the coaching point is in terms of, like, you're trying to tackle somebody. Like, you're behind him. You can't horse collar tackle. You've got to get him to the ground. And we're talking about big physical elite athletes that, you know, it's not easy to get to the ground. So this one, I understand the outcry from defensive players. I'm curious to see what the coaching technique is in regards to, like how do you actually get a player down as you're approaching him as a defender from behind in some of these situations.
Yeah, especially if you're the slower guy.
You lightly touch him, and you say, get down, please.
Yeah, if you're the slower guy, and you're trying to catch the guy from behind, I mean, it's you're desperate. It's either that or score the touchdown, so you have to do what you have to do. So that you can't be thinking about, well, what's my technique here, and how to let's avoid the hip drop, and, like, dude, nobody thinks that way, right?
I don't even think the coaches know how to coach that. A lot of times there's contact, and then you're just wrestling the guy down.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, I think there's an element of this where I think guys have been tackling that way for years. Mm-hmm. And if you would have asked them, like, what's your technique here? You know, they'd be like, well, listen, after I hit him and he didn't go down, I wrapped him up and just did everything I could to wrestle him to the ground.
And this is just so, the guy's, like, still trying to run. He's still trying to gain yards, right? Yeah. He's got 1 yard to get to the sticks. It's 3rd and 9. You got to get him down. That's tough.
Just jump on his back. That's all. Just jump on his back and hopefully he'll fall. You know, he may take you on a ride for about 3 yards.
No, stop.
Because you can't knock him forward, right? Because if you're knocking him forward, he's going to make the sticks, right? You almost have to concede the first down. So you. Part of the reason it happens, right, you're pulling him back so he can't stretch out and get to the chains.
You're trying to stop the guy's momentum. There's no question about it. And I think that, you know, it's like, you know, if you're chasing somebody from behind, like, you don't push him in the back to get him to fall forward, right? Like, it's the same general concept. And a lot of times you'll see defensive backs run behind somebody and swing at their leg to basically get them to trip themselves, like if they're trying to catch somebody. But those are all very different tackles than, hey, listen, I'm catching somebody from behind, I'm jumping on his back, and I'm trying to wrestle him to the ground.
It's what we would call a conundrum.
Yeah.
For a defensive player or a quandary.
I feel for defensive players.
You're in a quandary. What do you do?
I don't know what you do. I mean,
play offense. Tell your coach, I'm not playing defense.
Yeah.
I'm playing offense.
Score more points.
Tim, how are you going to coach your players?
Yeah,
how are you
going to
coach,
coach
your high school players?
Yeah, coach.
Who's going to be the practice dummy to get, you know?
This is an interesting – I actually was thinking about the kickoff rule, you know, and as that relates. Because, you know, one of the things we do see is that, you know, like there's some trickle-up stuff in football, you know, from high school to college, college to the pros. And there's obviously trickle down things as well in terms of rules and player safety. And you just think about something like the guardian caps, right? Like no one wanted to wear guardian caps, and then the NFL is wearing them. And you know, you go around high school, there are some teams that play games in guardian caps. And so, look, I think one of the things that I think it's important for coaches of all levels, and I certainly fit into this now. Look, I'm going to be eager to see the way that people coach it, you know, especially at the pro level, which where we'll see it, and no differently than the kickoff. It's why, you know, the way Pete Carroll had been coaching tackling in Seattle, and, you know, the NFL puts together a USA football, you know, video of this is, you know, how the Seattle Seahawks tackle should be good enough for, you know, you to tackle this way at your high school program or your college program. And so people are studying it, trying to learn it. And yeah, that'll be no different for me or a bunch of other guys that are coaching high school football or college football, is to see what the reaction to this in the NFL is, how it's coached, and, you know, if you can implement that at the level where you're coaching.
Last one for you, Tim, quickly. Feels like we can say the first wave of free agency is behind us. Of course, we still have the draft and the next few waves of free agency. But now that this first wave is behind us, what's kind of the national perception of the additions that the Titans made in free agency?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think nationally, what's had everyone's attention is it feels like the Cowboys have done nothing, right? Like that's what's grabbing everyone's attention.
Classic.
And then, I think people feel like, yeah, look, the Titans have done good things. I think the big thing in terms of the challenge of what the perception is you look at the AFC, it's loaded with quarterbacks, it's loaded with good football teams. And so, you know, like whether it is, you know, adding star defensive players or guys on the offensive side of the ball, ultimately I think that everyone's going to still be in a wait and see in terms of how the quarterback plays. I think it is that simple, right? Like Tony Pollard, great. Jarius Sneed, great. You know, but what's your quarterback going to do? And look, I think that's fair, especially when you play in a division that's got C.J. Stroud and Trevor Lawrence, and Anthony Richardson, for that matter, we're still waiting to see on, and when you have a conference with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow and players like that.
It's a quarterback league.
Yep.
It's totally fair. I don't think Kansas City's shaking in their boots about who's playing corner because they know who's playing quarterback.
Exactly.
Tim, you are the very best. Appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Great. Thanks, guys. See you.